Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. A little John Lennon music. This is the anniversary of his assassination 28 years ago. That's pretty incredible. Pretty incredible. And I'm almost embarrassed to admit that I still remember exactly how I got the news, just like I remember exactly how I got the news of Kennedy's assassination, and both Kennedy's and Martin Luther King and John Lennon.
Murdered by my swimming teacher.
That's right. The guy who shot Lennon was
Mark David Chapman.
Spent some time in Decatur, which is not far from the Malloy compound here, and that's where you grew up, Decatur.
Yes, we all called him Captain Nemo at the Y.
He was the swimming instructor.
We liked Captain Nemo until he murdered John Lennon.
I hear you. 28 years ago tonight. It's pretty astonishing. Pretty astonishing. Okay, we're not going to be all depressed and, screwed up and nasty tonight. We have other reasons to get all depressed and screwed up and nasty tonight, other than the death of one of the greatest songwriters, American songwriters of all time, global songwriters of all time, right? Just a quick note, thanks to everybody at Green 960 in San Francisco for a really great time last Friday night. I got to stand and do comedy on the same stage where Randy Rhoads stood and did comedy. And guess what? I came to work today, and I wasn't fired. It's amazing. Anyway, we had a good time out there, and thanks to everybody who showed up for the gig. Folks that didn't. Just thanks to everybody. I'm in one of those moods tonight. Hey, thank everybody for everything. No, I'm not. Just kidding. Well, finally, is it the end of the road for this garbage that is just spewing from the keyboards of these right-wing nutcases on the Internet about Obama's not a citizen of the United States, and therefore he can't be president? Have we had enough of this? Oh, my God, I haven't even mentioned this because it's so bogus. It's such garbage, crap, juvenile junk. The Supreme Court today said, get out of our court! They declined to hear this, what's referred to as a long-shot challenge to Barack Obama's electoral eligibility. According to McClatchy newspapers, without comment, the court brushed off a lawsuit claiming Obama didn't meet the Constitution's citizenship requirements. Oh, my God. It's astonishing. This freak, Leo Donofrio, nice, in his petition, the Supreme Court had said, quote, since candidate Obama was born to a Kenyan father, he is not eligible to the office of the president since he is not a natural-born citizen, end quote. Who is this jerk-ass? You don't have to, what, how about if you're born to a a Swedish father and an American mother. Would that matter? Obama was born in Hawaii. His mother was a U.S. citizen, and his father, a native of Kenya, was a British subject. Since candidate Obama was born to a Kenyan father, he's not eligible. Oh, my God. Anyone born on U.S. soil is a U.S. citizen, regardless of parents' immigration status. It doesn't make any difference. Oh, and somebody ought to tell this jerkwad Donofrio that Hawaii has been a state since 1959. oh, my God. These right-wingers, give them a keyboard and a computer and a little bit of notoriety and put them up on, what are these right-wing jackass sites? WorldNet Daily or Limbo will give them a little time, or Hannity will have them on Fox News Channel. And they just, I don't know, it takes on a life of its own, right? These people are nothing more than stains on the pavement until something like this comes up. Well, I'm going to stop the Negro from being president. That's what I'm going to do. No, you're not. But it's just incredible. McClatchy says some conservative activists haven't been convinced that Barack Obama is a citizen. They've been paying for ads, including a full-page open letter that appeared November 17th in the Reverend Sun Myung Moon-owned Washington Times. Of course, the Reverend Moon considers himself to be the latest incarnation of Jesus H. Christ. Is anyone challenging that? Obama says he's a citizen. No, he's not. Reverend Moon says he's Jesus Christ. How about that, boys? You mouth-breathing right-wing freaks. Ah! So it's been tossed. Obama, you little rat worms. What else we got here? Oh, yeah, the December 7th editorial. Yesterday's editorial, New York Times, about Bush's epic denial, is what they call it in the Times, displayed in his interview with Charlie Gibson of ABC News the other day. We played some of that sound for you, huh? And of course, Bush considers that an important exit chat with the American public as well. You know, this is where he gets to sit down with somebody important like Charlie Gibson and talk to the American people. And I love what the Times says. The Times says it was skin-crawling to hear him tell Gibson that the thing he will really miss when he leaves office is no longer going to see the families of slain soldiers because they, the parents, make him feel better about the war. Oh, my God. This is a ghoulish, sick son of a bitch, isn't he? I won't be able to go see the parents of dead soldiers anymore. Oh, damn. George, maybe you can watch the funeral notices in the newspaper. Whatever newspaper might be available wherever you wind up. And if you still have your freedom, when you see a funeral announcement of someone who died in one of your goddamn little wars, maybe you can just get on a plane or a train or a bus, and go to the funeral home, find the grieving parents, and tell them how good they make you feel. You sick bastard. His comments about his decision to invade Iraq was, as the Times says, a rewriting of history to take sort of the passive, oh, mistakes were made, and a refusal to accept responsibility that makes Dick Nixon look like somebody who jumped right up whenever he was called on, right? The Times says, at one point, Bush was asked if he wanted any do-overs. Here's what he said, quote, the biggest regret of presidency has to have been the intelligence failure in Iraq. Remember, we play that one for you. A lot of people put their reputation on line, said the weapons of mass destruction were cause for war. After everything we and the world have learned about this lying son of a bitch and this lying son of a bitching vice president and the way they manipulated Congress and public opinion and anyone else they could bully or lie to, Bush is still acting as though he decided to invade Iraq after suddenly being handed life and death information on Saddam Hussein's arsenal and his mushroom clouds and his great big bottles and vials of anthrax loaded onto the tops of ICBMs. We just have to bind them. And, of course, as we all know now, as the Times editorial says, the truth is that Mr. Bush, Mr. Cheney, and Rumsfeld have been chafing to attack Iraq since before September 11, 2001. They justified that unnecessary war using intelligence reports that they knew. The Times says, or should have known to be faulty. I would correct you there, New York Times. They knew goddamn good and well because Cheney ordered them. They knew it was all lies, every single bit of it. And despite it all, Mr. Bush said he will, quote, leave the presidency with my head held high. And presumably with his eyes closed to all the disasters he's dumping on the American people and Barack Obama.
let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Field. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 22 past the hour. 22 past the hour, as usual. The people gather at Strawberry Fields in Central Park to commemorate the shooting of John Lennon. I guess they do it every year, right? Last time we were in New York, we took Molly to Strawberry Fields. Not that she, you know, knows anything about it. Again, not going to get real hung up on it, but I just think it's notable, don't you? There is something going on in Chicago. I'm sure you've heard about it now. That might offer a glimpse of how the continuing loss of manufacturing jobs in this country is starting to boil over. As you've probably read now, workers laid off Friday, 3 days ago, from Republic Windows and Doors, which had been around for a long time. Some of the people had been working there for 35 or 40 years. But workers were laid off. They were let go. It's a vinyl windows and sliding door manufacturing company. There were 250 workers still working there. The place at one point had employed about 700 workers, I believe. But that was then, and this is now. So the managers of Republic Windows and Doors, they gave no notice. They told them 3 days, gave them 3 days' notice of the closing. Paid them no severance. Paid them no unpaid vacation pay, sort of like what Air America did to us, right, Kathy? You know, not that I'm comparing myself, but you know, honest to God, we don't make that much money. Somebody said one time, "How much you make?" And I said, "Well, none of your goddamn business." But it's not six figures. How's that? So some of the workers have decided enough's enough, and they are occupying the factory. The sharpest criticism is coming, they're directing toward their former bosses, who gave them very little notice. I believe they were supposed to get, 6 months' notice? Not 6 months, but in a situation like this, a hell of a lot more than 3 days. And also, Bank America has a big part of this. Workers blamed Bank America, which is a lender to this company, saying the bank had prevented the company from paying them what they were owed. An organizer with the union workers there said, "Here, the banks like Bank of America get a bailout, but workers can't be paid." Well, sure, that's the way it works in predatory capitalism. The worker is a liability. American workers have always been liabilities to American employers, except during slavery. At every other time in the history of predatory capitalism in this country, which is our entire history, isn't it? Yeah, our entire history. Workers are a liability. They are a cost. That's in the brains of these capitalist sons of bitches. Workers have always been a liability, never an asset, never. And the American worker has become the most productive in the history of workforces anywhere. Doesn't matter. The only time American workers were assets was during slavery, because then they were free. Hey, we love our Negroes. We love these slaves. Goddamn right. Get out there and chop that cotton. Bring down that timber. Haul that pulpwood. Hee-haw. But now, and for the past 150 years, liability, liability, liability. So it's always sad. This is something that Studs Terkel and Howard Zinn and have written about. The utter, absolute, total, complete disrespect for the American worker. That's why I can't do Labor Day. It's like, oh, God, I'm sorry. I can't do a big show on the American labor movement. You know, I can't because everybody knows now that it was an experiment that failed. Yes, it did. Come on, lefties. It failed. And it failed for a number of reasons, not the least of which the American public didn't understand what the labor movement was about. But anyway, I digress. In a statement issued a couple of days ago, Bank of America officials said they could not comment on their client's situation because of, you know, confidentiality obligations, blah, blah, blah. But a spokeswoman for Bank of America said, quote, neither Bank of America nor any other third-party lender to the company has the right to control whether the company complies with applicable laws or honors its commitments to its employees, end quote, which is nothing more than a smarmy, self-righteous goddamn lie. Bank of America controlled everything because they controlled the spigot where the money came from.
Tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes.
Your host for a Pience Friends Future, it's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. Now back to the factory in Chicago, the Republic Windows and Doors, that has been in business since 1965. And the occupation, so-called, where these workers have said, no, we're not leaving. I think there are about 30 or 40 of them who have decided this is just something they're not going to tolerate. I don't know how long this will go on. I hope it goes on for a long time, and I certainly wish other workers would do this. Every time an incident like this occurs, you think, well, maybe this is the trigger event. Maybe this will make working class and middle class Americans say, you know, we've had enough of this. We've really, really had enough of this. But inside the factory, the so-called occupation, according to the authorities, is relatively quiet. The Chicago police said they're watching the situation, but they had no reports of a criminal matter to investigate. I remember the Chicago or the Cook County Sheriff said a couple of weeks ago that he was going to stop evicting people who lived in rental property where the owners of the rental property had failed to live up to their obligations. And the sheriff of Cook County was having to go out and evict people who had done nothing but pay their rent on time. So, what was it we were talking about today, Kathy? Rod Blagojevich, who's the governor of Illinois, says he completely supports this. What else did he say that we found kind of lefty? We were talking about how George Ryan, who Blagojevich succeeded, George Ryan, the former governor, who's now in prison, or maybe he's out by now, but I guess he's still in. He was convicted of all sorts of fraudulent things, but it was George Ryan who declared a moratorium on the death penalty after suspending or commuting every single person on Illinois' death row. For the simple fact that in the short period that Kathy and I were in Chicago, 3.5 years, I think 10 or 12 people who had been convicted and sentenced to death were found to have been innocent. Not had their death penalty reduced because of a technicality. I mean innocent. And as I've said before, we had three of those people on in our studio on our program in Chicago. So George Ryan did a very progressive thing, even though he was a Republican, just corruption up to his eyeballs and graft and sleaze, but he commuted all the death sentences of everybody on death row in Illinois. Now, Blagojevich, a Democrat governor, is also taking a stand and busting the hell out of Bank America by saying that the state of Illinois will no longer do business with Bank America. Good for you, Rod. Good for you. Good for you. Is he going to go to jail, too? Oh, Christ. The couple of quotes from the Institute for Public Accuracy about that issue, Bill Fletcher, who's co-founder of the Center for Labor Renewal and author of a book called Solidarity Divided, The Crisis in Organized Labor and a New Path Toward Social Justice. He said today, quote, the workers have it right at the factory. Enough is enough. Working people have been continuously stepped on. And in the midst of this economic crisis, the bailouts have ignored the working person. People should stand in support of the demands of the workers and maybe a few other workplaces, including some Wall Street brokerage firms. Maybe they need to be taken over, too. Nelson Lichtenstein, who is a professor of history at the University of California, Santa Barbara, where he directs the Center for the Study of Work, Labor, and Democracy, said, quote, as in the 1930s, this factory occupation is to uphold the spirit of the law, not subvert it. In 1936 and 37, American workers occupied scores of Midwest factories to force employers to obey the recently enacted labor law. Today, the employees of Republic Window are occupying their workplace to uphold the laws that require employers to pay them their wages and severance pay. But beyond that, the occupation is designed to put pressure on banks and employers to fulfill the letter and spirit of the financial bailout package, which was designed to keep credit flowing and production humming, end quote. And you know what the banks are doing. These filthy sons of bitches, these predators who have taken hundreds of billions of our money, and rather than free up credit, because none of these scum trust each other. They're just holding on to it. So you have a company like Republic Windows and Doors, who depend on cash flow to meet their payrolls, to pay people for vacation time. And Bank America knows exactly what it's doing when it cuts off the credit flow. They know what they're doing. And for this spokeswoman to come up with a smarmy, asinine statement, well, it's not our place to tell our clients what to do with their employees. Oh, God. Fran Tobin, is an organizer, regional organizer with the group Jobs with Justice. She said today, quote, only weeks after taking $25 billion in bailout money, Bank of America is turning its back on hundreds of workers making energy-efficient doors and windows in Chicago by refusing to continue credit to Republic Windows and Doors. To make matters even worse than putting 300 people out of work, Bank of America has instructed Republic to refuse to pay workers' comp that they're legally entitled to, or earned vacation pay, or the severance pay legally required under federal law in lieu of proper notice of plant closing. They don't care. They don't care because, you know, until January 20th, they have a miserable, predatory son of a bitch in the White House and his crew of robbers around him. So these people know. Bank America, Republic Windows and Doors, hey, they're just workers. Screw them. Who cares? We'll find more. And if we don't find more, well, we'll just move to, let me think. I know, China. I wonder if 50 years from now this country is going to experiment or will have experimented successfully with democratic socialism. Or, oh, okay, I'm sorry, social democracy. Obama is saying that he is committing or going to commit to a huge public works project to revive the economy, create jobs. He wants to do this by upgrading roads and schools and bridges and dams and energy efficiency. And according to reports, the scale of this program is larger than anything since the construction of the interstate highway system back in the 50s. That was, according to this, the final estimate of the cost of the interstate system. They guessed this about 5 years ago. It was $128 billion, and the federal share of that was $114 billion. The states had to come up with the rest. That was the program that began under Eisenhower in 1956. Right now, more than 5,000 highway projects are ready to go, but there's no money. That's according to various state transportation officials. If Congress would come up with $64 billion as part of an economic aid plan, the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials, which made this list, said the projects would provide jobs and help reduce a backlog of crumbling, their word, roads and bridges. $64 billion. How much did AIG get so far? Dirty, filthy bastards. Obama said his plan would employ millions of people by, quote, making the single largest new investment in our national infrastructure since the creation of the federal highway system in the 50s, end quote. And he went on to say that state officials would lose the federal dollars if they did not quickly use the money to repair highways and bridges. Unlike the public or federal money that's going to these banks and investment houses and massive insurance companies, this money would have to be used. The other money that goes to these financial institutions is just sitting in somebody's pocket, or I don't know, they're probably just goosing each other with it and making money on overnight interest while the country goes straight to hell. Oh, by the way, in a joint statement, New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell and California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger said it would help the United States, this idea of a public works projects, to help us to stay ahead of other countries. In a joint statement, they said, quote, to stay competitive globally, the time to repair and modernize our nation's infrastructure is now, end quote. Now, let's see how much whining and bitching the Republicans will do about this, right?
Working class hero is something to be. They hurt you at home and they hit you at school. They hate you if you're clever and they despise a fool. Until you're so crazy you can't follow their rules. Working class hero is something to be. A working
yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, and from Prairie 2, our economic report tonight, he writes, hey Mike, 533,000, a staggering number of jobs lost for a month. The bleakest predictions were for 400,000. This was last month. It even surprised me, but I'm a bit of a Pollyanna. That same day, they announced the official revisions for September and October. Both were up more than a third over the numbers they announced before the election. That always happens, doesn't it? When the official November numbers come out, it will probably be around 750,000 jobs lost for 1 month alone. Economists are already talking about how much worse December is, and they expect layoffs to really take off when the rate of commercial bankruptcy starts to pick up, when they default on their end, of year payments. Can we break a million for December? If not, there's always January. The Bush crime family will still be screwing things up most of the month. 70% of the layoffs have been service sector jobs. Those jobs from the new service sector economy that would replace our old manufacturing economy. The service sector economy is about to be replaced by the scrounging for food economy. Now that Republicans are forced to say the R word, recession, while they are falling back on saying this isn't the Great Depression, small problem, the rate of decline is steeper than the 30s, and getting steeper every day. In the 30s, we exported lots of manufactured goods, lots of oil, and loaned lots of money to everybody. Now we import most of our goods, most of our oil, and borrow money from everybody. Of course, now we just print the money. FDR said in his inaugural speech, "All we have to fear is fear itself." Today's problems are much worse, and the tools to fix them have been stolen by the Republicans. Factories gone, currency debased, total federal debt approaching the gross domestic product of a year, dependent on the kindness of governments who have attacked us or have threatened to, infrastructure crumbling, heck of a job, Brownie. China is the key to whether or not we go under in 2009. It's no wonder that Obama picked a Secretary of Treasury who is fluent in Chinese. The current secretary, Paulson, was a major player in setting up this dance of death with China. The new secretary will have to go over there and explain to them that everything the Bush crime family told them was a lie, and the very existence of civilization depends on us coming to some arrangement. If not, the next and last president of the United States will be Sarah Palin. The segment brought to you tonight by the makers of Genuine Stone Spear Points. Our motto? Better than scrounging for food with a sharp stick. Prairie 2. Yeah, they've done a job on us, haven't they? Oh, my God. And Bush sits there in his one of his exit interviews with Charlie Gibson. Well, Charlie, what part of the Bush worldview, Charlie? Bush sits there with ABC's August Charles Gibson and tells the American public that, I never compromise my values. You miserable little bastard, you. And the one thing he's going to miss most of all is visiting grieving families of dead soldiers, because in visiting the sobbing, grieving parents, it makes him feel good about his war against terrorism or something. This is one psychopathic individual. We seem to forget that. All the books that came out, Bush on the Couch, and all the looks inside this son of a bitch's mind, right? That's just gone by the by because, well, now we're trying to figure out how to make spear points. I have no idea either. Do you? But this is what the sociopath has done to the country. To us. And to the world. The blood on this man's hands. Oh, my God, he's drenched in it. I'm leaving the office with my head held high. I'm going to get me a job. Yeah, I guess I'll probably sit on board director somewhere, you know. Laura's been looking for a house. We keep saying Dallas. Actually, it's Paraguay. I'll get a job. Yeah, I'm going to miss it. I'm going to miss the blood and the death and the, you know. But it's tough. It's tough being a president. Tough being a war president. I don't want to be a war president. They just wouldn't have lied to me about that intelligence. I probably wouldn't have invaded, you know. Yeah. Wouldn't have. It's a lonely job, but that's politics. The Pentagon plans to recruit up to 1,000 foreigners who have lived legally in the United States for at least 2 years. The Pentagon is going to recruit them to cover the chronic shortage of doctors, nurses, and linguists who are available for wartime duty. Also, the military is going to recruit from pools of foreigners who've been living in the States on student and work visas, refugees or political with political asylum status or other temporary visas. They need these people. They need these people. Robert Gates, Defense Secretary, has authorized the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps to recruit certain legal residents whose critical medical and language skills are, quote, vital to the national interest, end quote, using for the first time a law passed 3 years ago. In other words, the military is forced by law to recruit non-Americans for these so-called vital positions over patriotic Americans who happen to be gay, rather than hire American citizens who are versed in Arabic, who are nurses, who are doctors, and happen to be gay. This sick son of a bitch is going to require that foreigners be hired. You like this? You like this, America? Eh? Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program on Nova M Radio. Well, that's where it starts. By the time it gets to you, it's probably, it could be Sirius, it could be XM, it could be the Internet, it could be any of just an endless list of stations. Right? So right before the break there, I was starting to get really frothing at the mouth and pissed off and insane again about this new ruling. Not a new ruling, but the first time a law passed 3 years ago has been used. This law will allow the Defense Department to draw from a huge pool of aliens living in the United States, legal aliens who have been on green living on green cards or are seeking permanent residency. And people who are here because they are political refugees or seeking asylum status, students. Huh? Because you see, the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marine Corps, each of the services needs recruits who have critical medical and language skills that are referred to by Robert Gates, Secretary of Defense, as, quote, vital to the national interest, end quote. And that includes, like I said, linguists, doctors, nurses. So the military is forced by law now to recruit non-Americans for these so-called vital positions in place of patriotic Americans who happen to be gay. Now consider this. The Pentagon says it has a chronic shortage of linguists. Oh, really? Do you? People who speak Arabic? Oh, damn. But last year, the military forced out 58 Arab speakers, English Arab speakers, Arabic speakers, however you say that, 58 of them. Why? Because they were gay. And now they're attempting to replace those 58 trained linguists with foreigners. From 2002 to 2006, the United States' glorious military kicked out 3,715 troops under the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. You think any doctors or nurses or linguists were included in that group. What is this obsession that is so nauseous in this country with gay people? What is this? It's absurd. I don't do these Christian fundamentalist freaks really have this much power? I guess over the military is that it, or over? I mean, oh my God! Hi, I'm here to help you kill the enemy. Oh really? Yes. Are you gay? Yes. Oh, I don't need your help. Go away. It's absurd. Barack Obama agrees, according to vetvoice.com. Not only does Obama agree it's absurd, so does the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Admiral Michael Mullen, agrees it's absurd. 75% of Americans agree it's absurd. And now it's on Congress to pass legislation that allows gays to serve openly in the armed forces. Does anybody ever stop and think that maybe, just maybe, I realize it's going to be a very jingoistic statement, but I mean, and it's going to put me on the same side as, what's his name? Who's the guy on CNN, Kathy, that's always going off on foreigners? Lou Dobbs. This is going to put me on the same side as Lou Dobbs, and I hate that because it's very stinky and smelly and nasty over here on the same side as Lou Dobbs, but it's ridiculous to have foreigners filling military roles of such a sensitive nature when Americans are willing and able. But because they might. I mean, what is it? Is it being gay that is so abhorrent to the military? Or is it sleeping with somebody of the same sex? You know, doing the nasty! Which is it? I can't get my mind around that whole issue. I really can't. Sick sons of bitches. They would rather turn people out, so to speak, than use their skills because they happen to be gay and hire foreigners to take over what even Gates says are skills vital to the national interest. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. Oh, well, Obama has chosen retired General Eric Shinseki. We talked about this last week a bit, to be the next Veterans Affairs Secretary. This is great. This is payback because, you know, he was a former Army Chief of Staff who was mocked and vilified by pieces of human fecal material like Donald Rumsfeld when he was Defense Secretary and Paul Wolfowitz, the stinky, smelly little rat who was Rumsfeld's assistant, deputy. They both mocked him and said he was wildly off the mark when this general said that any invasion of Iraq is going to happen, it will take several hundred thousand U.S. troops to control Iraq after the invasion. And if you remember that scum-sucking Wolfowitz and Rumsfeld belittled those estimates. And as a result, General Eric Shinseki was marginalized and retired early from the Army. And of course, his words proved to be absolutely true. Then early in 2007, the little Bush bastard had to pretend like, or maybe he's not pretending. I don't think Bush understands reality. Had to conduct himself as though Shinseki had never said what he said and ordered the surge. And Obama says he chose Shinseki for the VA post because he, quote, was right, end quote, in predicting that the U.S. will need more troops in Iraq than Rumsfeld lied about. Veterans groups, according to the Associated Press, are happy with this decision. Paul Rykoff, executive director of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, said, quote, General Shinseki has a record of courage and honesty And it's a bold choice to lead the VA into the future. He's a man that has always put patriotism ahead of politics and is held in high regard by veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan, end quote. I honestly do believe that people like Wolfowitz and Rumsfeld and Cheney and Bush and the rest of them really should be tried for crimes against humanity and war crimes, you know, and you know and I know they're going to get away, right? They're going to get away. They're going to walk. They're going to laugh and go take their jobs in the private sector. And they'll be paid very, very well. All right. I've only got one more thing to bring up here right now, and that's about the offer to confess at Guantanamo by the alleged 9/11 plotters. You heard about that today? I was listening to The World on NPR and heard this 3 o'clock this afternoon Eastern Time. The what? Not they've offered to confess, not plead guilty. There's a difference. All five, two of whom have been judged incompetent, mentally incompetent to stand trial. But they had a meeting. I'll tell you about it when we come back. And then let's do some phone calls. The number is 800-989-1480. No bozos tonight. Come on. Let's hear some good callers. 800-989-1480. You might want to get in the queue now. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Friday night arrives without a suitcase. Sunday morning creeping like a nun.
21 past the hour. So, the news from Camp X-Ray, or whatever it's called, Camp Delta, anyway, Guantanamo, a prison facility where American human rights and civil rights end, and the process of torture so that certain members of the Bush crime family can be sexually aroused, apparently, begins that place. Well, at that place, all five of the Guantanamo detainees that were charged with planning and coordinating the attacks on September 11, 2001, have now asked a military judge there to accept their confessions in full. Their confessions, not guilty plea, their confessions. The request, according to the Times, appears to be intended to cut short any effort to try them and to challenge the United States government to put them to death. Now, there are supposed to be routine proceedings there today. As a matter of fact, it's my understanding that certain select relatives of 9/11 victims from New York City were flown down there for these proceedings. The military judge, Colonel Stephen Henley, disclosed that he had received a written statement from the five men altogether. The statement said the five planned to stop filing written motions and instead, quote, to announce our confessions in full, end quote. And then they brought Sheikh Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, remember him, who looked like a bad version of John Belushi when they busted him, remember that? Who was then tortured, has been tortured for years and years and years. As he questioned Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the judge asked whether he, Mr. Muhammad was prepared to enter pleas to the charges against him. Muhammad answered, yes. He went on to say, we don't want to waste our time with motions. All of you are paid by the U.S. government. I'm not trusting any American. End quote. And then the judge began methodically questioning each of the five men to determine if they agreed with the joint statement. And they all seemed to. Ramzi bin Al-Shib, another of the detainees, said in response to questions from the judge, we, the brothers, all of us, would like to submit our confession. Now, according to the Times, these events were not a complete surprise because there have been indications for months that these people were resisting working with the military lawyers assigned to represent them. And so this came about today. The American political calendar, the Times says, may also be a factor. Many people inside and outside the government expect President-elect Obama to close down the military commission that have been used by the Bush administration and to direct that many detainees held in Guantanamo be prosecuted in the American civilian legal system. Now, if that happens in the first days of the Obama administration, then the proceedings today will have been the detainees' last opportunity to challenge the system here with guilty pleas that could yield them, the Times says, the opportunity for what they see as martyrdom. Really? Or is it because maybe, perhaps, just possibly, they're all insane? I don't presume to know. I just know that according to human rights groups, lawyers groups, international human rights groups, and the military, the CIA, not the military, the CIA itself, and animals and pigs and scum inside the Bush administration, everybody has agreed that these people have been tortured, and they've been tortured for lengthy periods of time. What would you confess to if you were tortured? What would you confess to if someone tortured your child in front of you? What would you confess to? I would probably confess to assassinating Lincoln, anything they wanted me to confess to, anything. But you see, in the case of these five co-defendants, two of whom apparently, I'm guessing here, they're not legally competent to stand trial. That means they must be legally not sane, which is another way of saying insane, right? Isn't that really? I mean, come on. Were they insane when they plotted to blow up the trade towers? Were they insane when they were captured? When did they turn insane, and how do they now act as their own defense attorneys and sit there with three people who have not been judged insane and declare, we want to make full confessions? Interesting choice of words. Not we want to plead guilty, but we want to make full confessions. This is so sick. This chapter of American history, not that it's unique. There have been other times in American history where events like these, similar to these, have left a stain on this country that is deep and horrible and bloody. Here's another one. We'll be back after the break. Let's do some phone calls. The number here again is 800-989-1480. All right.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Twenty-eight 25 before the hour, regarding the confessions of all the so-called key plotters of the 9/11 2001 attack on this country, who all of a sudden, all five have agreed to confess, have agreed to issue a joint confession. Nothing suspicious about that at all, huh? Reg writes, this is a total farce. After 4 years in captivity and 6 months of torture, including waterboarding, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed confessed to masterminding the September 11th attacks, the Richard Reid shoe bombing attempt to blow up an airliner over the Atlantic, the Bali nightclub bombing in Indonesia, the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, and a host of other foiled attacks. The message to gullible Americans, and supported by the media, will be that Bush's torture techniques work, and that the perpetrators of 9/11 have admitted their crimes. It's part of the Bush legacy garbage that Karl Rove is orchestrating. I'm sure he had a hand in this. Yeah, Rove is working overtime. He's the one that told Bush to go on Charlie's program on ABC and say, well, you know, if we would have known there were no weapons. See, that's the story now. That's the story. And Americans being Americans eventually will buy it, just like Americans being Americans will believe that Bush's torture techniques work. Yeah, torture him. Yeah, remember, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed confessed to everything, every single thing. Now, of course, the Bali nightclub bombing in Indonesia, I think three or four people were executed for that, last week by firing squad, the people who were actually guilty. But it doesn't matter. Like I said, when they're torturing you, you will. I don't care if your name is Khalid Sheikh Mohammed or Joe O'Herlihy. You will confess. Look what happened to Winston Smith. You will confess. You will say any goddamn thing that your torturer wants to hear. Well, aren't we proud this evening? We got confessions. God damn it, they want to confess. Yeah, all righty now. Well, then I guess it's time for us to leave Afghanistan and Iraq, right? I mean, isn't that why we were there? To get the people who, oh, that's right, bin Laden. Oh, God damn. Well, that means we're going to have to continue to maintain 200,000 soldiers in combat zones. I wonder if O.J. Simpson would assist in the search for Osama bin Laden, you think? Because O.J., of course, you know what happened to that rat bastard on Friday. O.J. has been searching high and low for the killers of Nicole and Ron Goldman, right? We talked about this in San Francisco, didn't we? Ron Goldman. Can you imagine? What's his name? O.J. Simpson. First of all, what a tragedy. Not that I feel any sympathy for this bastard, but what he had and what he decided to do with it. But can you imagine his first night in the Nevada State Penitentiary? O.J. Yoo-hoo. Come here. Look what I've got. You big football star? Oh, boy. Let's huddle. How long do you think it'll be before someone tries to kill him? Oh, man. All right. Your phone calls. Oh, Jesus, there's only two people here? I don't mean to make it sound like Mark and Ramona are only, but, you know. Let's talk with Mark, who's called from San Antonio, listening on Sirius. Hey, Mark.
Hey, what's going on, Brother Mike? How you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good, good, thank you. I have a question for you.
Uh-huh.
Considering the way that things are going right now, it seems as if the Bush crime family is on a timetable. Think about the way that they got the congressmen together earlier this year and told them that if the economy tanked, then there would be anarchy in the street.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Think also about the North American Command and right. the initiative that's got American soldiers here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Now, add to that this new directive that you spoke of tonight, whereby you can bring in foreign soldiers mm-hmm. to work here in the United States as American soldiers.
No, wait.
If
you
take all that together, what does it add up to?
No, they don't have to be soldiers. They can be anybody. People on student visas, people who are resident aliens. That means somebody from Greece who happens to be here and would like to become an American citizen at some point, but is working, as an investment counselor or something. No, it's not foreign military. It's foreign anybody who happens to be in this country can be legally recruited to work for the United States military in areas that are sensitive to the national interest, critical to the national interest, and we have plenty of qualified Americans, but they will not be chosen or recruited because they happen to be gay.
That's right.
So what do I think of the whole thing? It's madness. The people who come up with these plans and programs are displaying what I think is just the sickness of organized religion, whether it is a Judeo-Christian or what. I don't even care. There are no restrictions regarding or comments even in the New Testament that I'm aware of. There might be one or two about homosexuality. But, you know, Jesus hopped around the Middle East with 12 dudes. If somebody's going to tell me that one of those 13 wasn't queer or two or three, come on, give me a break. Give me a break. So, but it's in the Old Testament, Leviticus, in the Book of Laws, where these terrible things are supposed to happen to people who lie. A man who lies with a man as he lies with a woman, or someone who spills his seed on the ground. Oh my God, that means if you masturbate, then you should be stoned to death.
Bestiality, eating shellfish as well.
Yeah, well, it's absolutely sick stuff, and I just wish, Mark, for once and for all, these rat bastards would disappear. I really do. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate you checking in. Prairie 2 writes, something screwy about aliens in the military story. Resident aliens have always been eligible for service. In fact, they used to draft them. The law 3 years ago allowed them to recruit outside the U.S. and promise citizenship. It has long been rumored that the Bush crime family has been doing it for years. It always was possible to join up outside the U.S., but not legal to recruit people. But apparently what is really going on here is that they are trying to steal doctors from a civilian program intended to recruit foreign doctors for rural areas. I don't know. It's I don't know what these people are doing. I just wish Karl Rove would... go away. You know what I mean? I don't even care how he goes away. He can go away like Lee Atwater went away, or he can go away some other way. Ramona is calling from Hammond, Indiana, listening on the internet. Hey, Ramona.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging.
Oh, okay. You're hanging? I hope it's not hurting your arms. Or.
Oh, no, not like that.
Oh, okay.
Oh, God. Oh, Bush saying that meeting the grieving families makes them feel good about the war?
I don't know where some of his statements come from. It's sick. It's disgusting. It's scary. It's
He doesn't feel good about the war until he meets the grieving families. Is that what I understand?
That's what I understand. That this this man is trying to say.
That is really twisted.
Yeah, it is.
What about families like us who, you know, our son was not killed but came back messed up? Does he want to meet with us?
No, he doesn't want it, because the only kind of soldier Republicans like are dead soldiers. And the reason for that is because then they can have their little ceremonies and give away awards and so on and so forth. But a dead soldier doesn't require tax money or care or help or acknowledgement that perhaps maybe the decision to send the now dead soldier into combat to begin with was a wrong decision. You see what I'm saying? And the other thing, too, is dead soldiers don't talk. They don't file lawsuits. They don't say, Halliburton provided us with rotten food. Dead soldiers are good soldiers to Republicans. Republicans love soldiers as long as they're dead.
I don't know. I just hope that they get there. I really, really hope that they go to trial for something.
For something. Hey, Ramon, I got to go. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, what Ramona was referring to, the actual quote, we had it earlier in the program tonight, according to the editorial in the New York Times on Sunday, it was skin-crawling to hear Bush tell Charles Gibson that the thing he, Bush, will really miss when he leaves office is no longer going to see the families of slain soldiers because they make him feel better about the war. Now, if that's not some sort of psychopathology, then nothing is crazy. Nothing. Nothing is insane, if that isn't. Sterling is calling from Tennessee, listening on Sirius. Say, Sterling.
Hey, Mike, how you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, not too bad.
Good, good.
I got a question for you.
Sure.
If you knew a couple that have been together for like 60, I believe it was like 63 years, they have been together, loving each other and all of that. Can you find anything wrong with hearing about anybody that's been together that long?
I couldn't find anything wrong with a same-sex couple that's been together for 63 minutes.
Well, I got news for you. That couple happened to be my aunt, and of course, I can't see anything wrong with it. In this world of nothing but hate and bigotry and everything else, how can anybody find anything wrong with two people that can stay together that long?
No rational, sane person could. Your aunt wasn't one of the part of the couple that were the first to get married in California, was she?
No.
Your aunt lives in Tennessee?
No, actually, my aunts are actually in Fort Worth, Texas.
Oh, okay.
They consider themselves, I guess, married. But I mean, to them, it doesn't take a piece of paper to make them a couple.
No, it doesn't. But what the piece of paper does do is to give them legal protections, to give them. Not just legal protections, but also legal obligations. It allows them. I read a list one time. I don't know, 5 years ago, something like 75 or 80 different legal options available to opposite sex married couples that are not available to same sex committed couples. It doesn't make any difference how long they've been together. It was an enormous list. Things that married couples can do once they become married. They can do to and for each other once they become married. But that gay couples or same-sex couples cannot do, no matter how long they've been together. And the list was long. So it is more than a piece of paper. You understand what I'm saying with that?
Yes, sir. I mean, I totally agree with it. I mean, I'm lucky. I've been with my wife for almost 23 years now. And, I mean, of course, we've got more legal rights than my aunts do, or more or less than my wife's oldest sister and her partner have been together for 20 some odd years. So I mean, they can't even make medical decisions
right
for each other.
Exactly.
You know, I'm sorry, but that piece of paper is actually issued by the state.
Yeah.
And when the government issues a license for someone to be able to marry, they should not be able to discriminate against anyone since it's a government piece of paper. If it was from a church only,
right,
maybe I could kind of understand a church.
Right. Right. Well, that's what we've talked about a lot on this program, Sterling. There's not a religious person out there that doesn't wind up going through the marriage ceremony without saying, and now by the power vested in me by the state of Alabama, of Michigan, whatever. It's not a religious. And this crazy Pat Boone, I was watching Oberman earlier tonight. This wrinkled old prune of a man who all of a sudden he's like Anita Bryant was back in the 70s. All of a sudden, Pat Boone has taken on the gay thing. He's now comparing people who are demonstrating in the streets, or were demonstrating in the streets for human rights. He's comparing them to the bombers in Mumbai, India. I mean, every one of these bastards are sick. They are. It is so blatantly obvious that a homophobe is sick down to the core of his or her very being. They're just eaten up with something. Hate, fear, self-loathing, perhaps. I don't know what it is. But I said this last week. Have you ever heard of an atheist or a humanist or whatever saying, queers shouldn't get married? Ever? No. Neither have I. It's always these religious fanatics. And especially as you get older, somebody like Pat Boone, I guess he's trying to get points with Jesus or God or somebody. Well, if I'm down here in my white bucks, what were some of his songs? What did he sing? Do you remember?
How old do I look?
Oh, never mind. You wouldn't know Jesus. He retired before you were a twinkle in your father's eye. Never mind. But if you've noticed, so many of these religious nutcases, when they start hearing or feeling the foul breath of Mr. Death on the back of their neck, all of a sudden they're going to get real, hey, we got to stop the queers, or something. Something that they think will please their sick God. But I digress. I'm sorry. Thanks, Sterling. Appreciate you checking in. We'll return after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back, 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program on Nova M Radio. Back to your phone calls here in just a second. The company formerly owned by Dick Cheney, he resigned his CEO-manship right before he announced that he was going to be George Bush's vice president. He told his buddies on the board of directors, man, I'm going to send you a lot of business. Halliburton and KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root. Here we go again. They are facing a number of lawsuits over their activities in Iraq and elsewhere. That would be Afghanistan. KBR happens to be the largest contractor for the Army and a top 10 contractor for the entire U.S. Department of Defense. No surprise there, because Dick Cheney is their former CEO and I believe it still gets some of the money. Anyway, a lawsuit has been filed, a number of lawsuits, but most recent one is a class action lawsuit that alleges Kellogg Brown and Root, quote, knowingly and intentionally. Now, see, that's knowingly and intentionally supplied U.S. troops and other individuals food that was expired, spoiled, rotten, or that may have been contaminated with shrapnel and other materials, end quote. The company is accused of supplying water that was contaminated, untreated, and unsafe. One lawsuit says Halliburton and KBR, quote, shipped ice served to U.S. troops in trucks that had been used to carry human remains and that still had traces of body fluids and putrefied remains, end quote. The lawsuit says, quote, the defendants burned medical waste that contained human body parts on an open-air burn pit. Wild dogs in the area raided the burn pit and carried off human remains. The wild dogs could be seen roaming the base with body parts in their mouths, end quote. The suit also alleges the companies, quote, prevented their employees from speaking with government auditors inspecting the military base. It just goes on and on and on and on, huh? The class action lawsuit was filed November 6th in a Texas court. Meanwhile, 16 members of the Indiana National Guard have also filed a suit against Kellogg Brown and Root seeking unspecified damages for alleged exposure to a toxic chemical at a Rocky Water plant treatment plant in 2003. Yada, yada, yada. It just goes on and on. 10 former KBR workers contend they were exposed to sodium dichromate at this water plant and filled a separate arbitration case. Without ending. I mentioned this last week, but now are part of it. It's just unbelievable. What should happen to a company that knowingly and willfully, a company whose former CEO is now the vice president, a warmongering son of a bitch who would send anybody but his own family members off to die if he could make a buck on it, probably his own family members. I can't think of somebody who is just more degenerate and evil than this filthy Dick Cheney. But what should be the penalty? Troops in the field who are relying on proper equipment, which they never got, under armored vehicles, which they didn't get, body armor, which they didn't get, weapons that work, but Jesus H. Christ, food and water? What should happen to the Halliburton and KBR executives if these two companies are found guilty? And if they're not found guilty, it'll be because payoffs to the judges or the juries or whoever's involved. You know this as well as I do. These filthy war profiteers. Wasn't there a time in this country when, or was it this country or some other country, where war profiteers were given summary trials and executions? Just bada bing, bada boom! That quick. What should happen? What should happen when those memos are uncovered? Not that they ever will be, but the ones from Cheney to Kellogg, Brown and Root, and Halliburton, where he said, well, I'm going to be the vice president of the United States, so you guys just hang in here and wait. I'll have more goddamn money for you than you can imagine. It's going to be billions. It's going to be tens of billions. Just cut my part out and put it in the usual place. Huh? What should happen? The list is just endless of what the Bush crime family has done. It is endless. Endless. I've said it before, there is not an area of governance that they haven't... can't say that on the air. That they haven't expelled some of their body fluids all over. There's nothing. Somebody tell me. You know, I've been waiting. I'm still waiting. If any one of you right-wing little Republican sons of bitches ever have the courage to call this program and give me one example of something honest, decent, good, or moral that this filthy organization has done, I'll send you immediately, I'll wire to your mama $100, and then she can give it to you, right? And you can go spend it on whatever you spend it on, you jerks. I'm getting angry again. Oh. But providing spoiled, rotten, contaminated food and water, can you imagine... Water carried in the same tanker trucks that had carried body parts. And the dignity with which Kellogg Brown and Root treated the severed arms and limbs and feet and skulls and body parts. Open fire pits in Iraq, burn it up and let the dogs carry it off. You evil sons of bitches. Is there any justice about this kind of stuff? Any, ever, under any circumstances whatsoever? Will Dick Cheney and his cohort of ghouls and vampires, will they ever be brought to justice? Will any of these people ever be brought to justice? You know the answer as well as I do. Phone number here is 800-989-1480. Let's go to John, who's calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. 92.1, right?
That's correct.
Hey, John.
Thanks for having me on, Mike.
Sure.
Okay, we've established you're feeling all right. I'm doing okay, so let's get on with the topic.
Okay.
Okay. I'd like to remind you that I believe, as you've mentioned on your show, that the techniques of torture that have been ordained from above by the Bush misadministration were taken from a translated communist guide on how to elicit false confessions.
Yeah, the false confession. I know waterboarding was used in the Spanish Inquisition. I'm not the least bit surprised that torture regimes subsequent to the 15th century also have used it because it's effective. You can get, you know, if you just use waterboarding, it's my understanding, you can get anybody to confess to anything just using that technique.
Well, that pretty much extended to the whole variety of techniques that they got from the
and you know I don't think it should be called waterboarding. That sounds like something you do at the beach. It should be called torture by drowning. Because
drowning
that's
simulation.
That's exactly what it is.
A thought, if you wouldn't mind.
It's what?
A thought, if you don't mind.
A fraud?
A thought.
Oh, a thought. Yes, go ahead.
Considering this administration's vested interest in keeping people scared to make them make their decisions, isn't that terrorism? Terrorism is causing fear to influence decisions.
Well, I would think. I think everything that the Bush crime family has done to the American people, government, reputation for the past 8 years has been pure, unbridled terrorism.
soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Welcome back. Yeah, 28 years ago tonight, John Lennon was assassinated in New York City. It's the reason for the Lennon-McCartney music tonight. Okay? You knew that. Tony is calling from Atlanta, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Tony. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm a little ticked off myself, just like you.
All right. What's up?
Well, you know, for real, we always forget about everybody else in America. You know, I listen to your show as well as I have Sirius Radio, so I listen to all the talk show hosts, and we always concern ourselves with everyone almost outside the, you know, the United States. We look at Guantanamo Bay, and we worry about the tortures that's happened there, but yet, you know, I drive the country, I drive a truck, and I drive across country every single day, and just about in any state, you know, for once a week or maybe once a month, our policeman is torturing innocent people, and we really cannot get an outcry. And then when we know that they have killed people, this and that, they go to court, and they're found not guilty with no punishment. You know, we have...
Well, in fairness, though, that's not true in all the cases, Tony. There's an awful lot of police review boards. I grant you, the militarization of local law enforcement has been a real mind scrambler. But and also in prisons, in U.S. prisons, there's a lot of stuff that you and I would have to identify as torture. But I don't see Guantanamo or the situation down there as being necessarily outside the U.S. I realize it is geographically, but it's being done by Americans. It's being sanctioned by the American government, and we have an amendment to the Constitution, I think the Eighth Amendment, that says there should be no such thing as cruel and unusual punishment. And you're right. I mean, I'm not arguing with you. You're right. It goes on in American prisons, in American jails, American police departments, American correction officers all the time. In cases where they just get so frustrated in dealing with suspects or prisoners or what have you, you know, you're right. I'm just saying, it's all part of the same piece of government mischief that goes on constantly, right?
Absolutely.
There you go.
And one other point, you know, Phil, because you know everybody's right now is talking about the O.J. Simpson case.
Right.
You know, now the O.J. Simpson case, true enough, now he was found innocent or not guilty.
Not guilty.
However many years ago for the murder.
Right.
But yet, you know, for everyone is supporting. We talk about the Constitution, but everyone is supporting this decision that went on in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the two people who had handguns is walking free. Now, I'm not sure.
No, again, I don't mean to keep correcting you, Tony, but his co-defendant was one of the people who had a gun. The other ones, I think, are coming up for trials, aren't they?
Well, they got pleas. They got deals, you know.
Did they? All right. Well, they're gonna serve some jail time. O.J. Simpson was the organizer. I mean, it was his gig. If these other clowns came along, and they cut a deal, everybody knows you cut a deal if you're involved as a group. In order to get people to talk, you're gonna start cutting deals with the lesser gang members, if you want to put it that way.
Absolutely.
Right,
I think if our American people would jump behind, like you said, Halliburton and Dick Cheney, because we all know what this gentleman done as far as, you know, this Republican media that's all we're hearing on every news show.
Sure.
Instead of talking about the George Bush crime family.
Right.
You know,
right.
No one, I know the Republicans own all these TV shows, I mean, the news broadcast shows, but we are not. You know, for real, I think it's time for the American people to be like you, really ticked off, but to set a prayer. And it's time to set a prayer and get ticked off because no one is really concerned about the United States of America.
Well,
the Americans who was here and who is now, because we have a lot of things going on and we have a lot of money going elsewhere that should be spent. You know,
Sure. And I agree with you, Tony. Let me just listen. Thank you, man. Let me just say something about the Simpson thing, because I didn't talk about it tonight. I talked about it Friday, but I was in San Francisco and it wasn't on the air. As much as I'm convinced, had I been on that jury, I would have the first jury where the murder of Ron Goldman and Nicole Brown occurred, I would have voted for his conviction. There's no question in my mind. The jury spoke. Call it jury nullification. Call it anything you want to call. The jury spoke. I feel that he got away with a double murder. How does that carry over to the Las Vegas trial? Well, according to the judge who handled this, she was not going to let any of that influence her. And I tend to believe it, and I'll tell you why. First, I didn't believe it. How can you not, when you have somebody like that sitting in front of you, even though it occurred 15 years ago, when this judge was probably still in law school, how do you not let the presence of O.J. Simpson influence your decision? And here's what put my mind to rest, if that's the right term. There were some legal experts that said that the sentence he got, that O.J. Simpson got, over the weekend, or whenever it was, for the event in Las Vegas, is pretty much what any defendant in a case like that would have gotten. And when I heard that, I thought, okay, then I don't have to think. Even though the son of a bitch was guilty on the murders, they're taking it out in this armed robbery thing. So that's the way I put that to rest. Thank you, Tony.
Proof that fish and humans can coexist peacefully. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. The Malloy program on NovM Radio. Let's go back to your phone calls here. Chris is calling from Tulsa, Oklahoma, listening on Sirius. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Mike, you're a godsend. I caught you talking earlier about the military tossing out the gays.
Uh-huh.
I'm transgendered, and my girlfriend just does not get the bone-chilling fear I have with her embracing the Republican Party and the religious right like Sarah Palin.
Well, now, wait a second.
if she
embraces the Republican Party and the religious right, I've got to ask, if you don't have the same points of view on religion and politics, Chris, what are you doing with her?
That's what I'm trying to figure out lately. We can't hardly talk anymore.
I mean, the sex can't be that good.
No. Oh, okay. As a matter of fact, that's a bone of contention right now.
And so to speak.
A couple of months ago,
don't give me too much information here, right?
No, okay. No. But remember a couple months or so ago, somebody announced that Bush had announced that the dying people in Iraq meant so much to him, he gave up something he loved dearly, and that was golf.
Golf, right.
Well, guess what I gave up?
Sex.
That's right.
Okay, well, listen, Chris. it's time for you to find a new girlfriend.
That's what I'm looking at.
Let me strongly recommend. I'm serious. I'm not messing around here. If your girlfriend is a subscriber to the beliefs of the religious right, then how in the world can she ever fully accept you as her partner?
Exactly, and it's killing me.
Well. Don't let it kill you. You sound way too young to be in that kind of a situation. Again, I'm not Dr. Laura. I'm not a relationship.
She thinks she's great too.
Oh my God. Oh, hey Chris, run! Pack your bags tonight. Run.
Yeah, that's what I've been thinking about.
Oh my God. Well, I don't know. I don't want to break up, say something that might break up a relationship, but good Lord. I mean, what is there in common? What attracted you to this person?
Personality, sense of humor.
About what? About crucifying gay people?
that didn't come up until just this election.
Well, I would never give anybody any advice, seriously, because that's way above my pay grade. But I'll tell you, were I you, I would certainly consider the relationship, right?
Oh, that's, believe me, I've been kicking it around for a long time.
All right, well, Chris, give me a call once you're a free man, and we'll talk again. I mean, oh my God, thanks, Chris. Appreciate you checking in. Not that I was going to ask him for a date or anything. I'm just saying, you know, give me a call so I can hear what happened. People get into the damnedest situations. I don't care if you're gay, straight, black, white, Jew, Gentile. It doesn't make any difference. People can get into the weirdest situations because they think there is some thing there.
Yeah, you have some stories you could share with your vast and erudite.
We don't need to go there. They all preceded you, so we don't need to go there. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Kathy. Of course I've got stories. Everybody's got stories. And mine probably do involve some people who are a little bit weirder than the average bear. But so what? And maybe not. Derek is calling from Cincinnati, listening on Sirius. Hey, Derek, welcome to the program.
Yes, I'm wondering whether you had any concerns about the Obamas making nice with Bushes by going on that tour of the White House, and whether there will be any recriminations for the Bush crime family when Obama's in office.
I think so much of that is formality.
These times beg for more informality, I think.
Right. But I mean, there's certain things that there's certain things one has to do if one is about to succeed the former president, become the president. There's certain traditional elements of that, I think, that you have to go through. Now, what was the second part? Whether or not that would influence anything?
No, when Obama takes office, whether there will be any legal recourse, whether they'll put the iron to the fire with the Bushes.
Well, all I know is what he said, and what he has said is that every order or directive or executive order, whatever, and some of the actions, I guess, by various branches of the Bush administration, whether it was the Justice Department or the Defense Department, all of this is going to be examined. And if there are any instances in criminality, they'll be pursued. I think that's what he said. I'm beginning to wonder if I ever heard exactly what he said, Obama, because I think I, like a lot of people who really wanted to see this man get elected, and because of his youth and his courage and the fact that he was going to clean house, I think a lot of us heard maybe things he didn't say. I don't know. I mean, the guy hasn't even taken office yet, so that's why I declared a moratorium. Some of his on criticizing or attacking just for the sheer hell of it. Some of his appointments or nominations for these positions are kind of questionable, to a real liberal Democrat like me. But on the other hand, he's got to govern a certain way. He cannot, he nor anybody who is a Democrat or Republican, for that matter, can ever win the presidency and then declare themselves to be a radical left-wing Democrat. It can't happen in this country anymore.
One other question.
Sure.
But regarding Afghanistan, he has said time and again that he would like to increase the troop presence there.
Yes, he has.
And the Taliban seems to be succeeding.
Absolutely in control.
What is he going to do? What do you think he should do?
I think what I'm hoping will happen, Derek, is that once he does assume office, and Derek, thanks for the call, once he does assume office, there will be some come-to-Jesus meetings between his military advisors who are more conservative, not politically, but in the sense of committing American bodies to unwinnable wars, and that he will listen. I've pointed out before on this program, and not that I've pointed out, history has pointed out, if Alexander the Great, the British Empire, and the Soviet Union, could not control, dominate, and change Afghanistan, how in the hell Does anyone in this country, whether it's civilian or military leadership positions, think we can? We cannot. What did I hear on NPR today from a guy who was a military commander in Afghanistan, I guess with NATO? He's an American. He now teaches at the War College. And he stated today categorically on that NPR program, The World. It's not NPR. It's Public Radio International. And he stated categorically, the Taliban now control 70% of Afghanistan. And we've been there, are you aware of this, for 7 years. American forces have been there. Limited, yeah, what, 25,000, 30,000 troops, plus some NATO troops. There is no way. It is utterly impossible for us to, quote, win, end quote, in Afghanistan. And besides, haven't the five masterminds now of the 9/11 attack all confessed down in Guantanamo? Wasn't that the big news story today? So as far as Afghanistan is concerned, I am hoping, I am, I want to say praying, but I can't. What's another word for praying? I am concentrating on Obama, as I said, having a come to Jesus meeting with real military advisors, not soldiers who are trying to win, their clusters or their stars or whatever, but real military advisors who will say to him, this cannot be won. It is impossible. It cannot be won. And the reasons it can't are becoming more and more clear. Pakistan is ready to dissolve as a country. Iran doesn't like us. The Russians don't like us. There is no way to get material to our soldiers except through Pakistan, Russia, or Iran. Unless we want to airlift, which is what primarily we've been doing. What did I read today? A huge convoy of trucks, 100 trucks that were heading into Afghanistan to support Western troops, blown up by the Pakistan militants who said enough. We can't win. We can't even survive there. Just remember, when one of your right-wing thug dumbass friend says, I'm not talking to you, Derek, I'm talking to anybody, who says, oh, we got to stay there and win. Alexander the Great couldn't. The British Empire at its peak couldn't. And the Soviet Union, arguably at its peak, couldn't. And we're going to? No, we're not. Before the hour.
Yes, she does.
Yeah, don't let me down, right? Thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, who engineered the program, Ben Birch, our technical advisor, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent. Bruce Enberg is our economic correspondent, and our ethical advisors are Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. Executive producer of this whole shebang is Catherine Bay. Back to your phone calls here in the closing moments of the Malloy program. Oh, yeah, there for Nova M founding members, there is a new Malloy's Uncensored mailbag up at the website at novamradio.com. Go to the member section and Another one of those. Mike reads the email from his psychopathic, some of his psychopathic listeners. There's some, a couple of funny ones there today. Oh my God. Anyway, if you are a Novam founding member, it's all yours, Bubala. Check it out. Sanchez is calling from the LA area. Listening on KTLK. Hey, Sanchez.
Hey, is this the Moondog Malloy Oldies But Goodies show?
Oh, man, you're out of your mind.
I'd like to dedicate Woman by John Lennon to my homegirl Kiki in East LA.
Yeah, you sound like you're calling Wolfman's program.
Remember Wolfman Jack?
Oh, do yeah. I remember him? Sure.
Oh, my God.
Hey, listen, I saw American Graffiti, so how could I ever forget Wolfman Jack? But the real reason you called...
Well, was to give some observations about John Lennon. I mean, I couldn't let the night go by without making at least
right.
a few little observations about it.
I hear you.
I think this is a phrase that you use often, and you're saying that we're living or we're wandering through a maze of mirrors. I really honestly think that we have crossed and we're living in the other side of the mirror when you figure that someone like Pat Boone is still crawling around the earth and John Lennon is.
I know. Oh, my God.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, truly.
Oh, you know what else is kind of weird? This
what?
Would have been, what's his name? Oh, my God, I'm drawing a blank.
Paul McCartney, George Harrison?
No.
Ringo Starr? Dennis Yost?
No, I had a senior moment there. Jim Morrison. Today would have been his 65th, 63rd, 60th. This is his birthday today.
Wow.
That's what I'm saying.
Wow.
Lennon was assassinated on Morrison's birthday. I think I've got that right. If I don't, somebody will correct me on that. But,
okay.
Anyway. No.
You know, it's difficult to convey the loss of somebody on that level. And honestly, I'm not... as one of these Beatles freaks that has, like, a collection of Beatle albums
right,
from
right,
every country.
Right.
I'm not like that, but it's difficult to convey, because I have a daughter, and she's 18 years old, and it's difficult to convey that iconic level.
Right.
And the amount of... I want to take you back to those grainy black-and-white documentary
mm-hmm.
footages. You know, remember the news footage where they're standing in front of the Pan Am airline logo and the American press is interviewing them? Do you remember how alive they were, how vivacious and full of spirit and personality, and how cardboard most of the Americans were behaving?
Oh, I know. It was Lennon certainly turned out to be somebody who was way out of time. I mean, you know, out of the time that the rest of us seem to have been in when he was at his peak. And I said, I've said this before, I said it in San Francisco the other night. I always had this idea when I was in my 20s that John Lennon was one of those people that he and I would, in a sense, grow old together.
Mm.
Because I remember what Frank Sinatra did as an old man, and some of it was still good, some of it really degenerated into slop.
Yeah.
But Frank Sinatra was a crooner. He wasn't a songwriter.
Yeah.
He wasn't a poet like Lennon. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think that's one thing that the little bastard who killed him deprived a lot of us of a certain age. Was the ability to grow old. Somebody in our peer group who was so incredible as John Lennon.
Well, at that time, when he was shot, you know, and that final album that he did, along with the, oh God, I'm forgetting the title, but the one that where him and Yoko are kissing, that's not the last album, but him and Yoko are kissing in the front, he's got Woman, just like starting over, those things. I'm having a senior moment myself here. But he was showing real growth. I mean, he's always been decades ahead
yeah.
of a lot of his peers, but it was almost as if he was about to catapult to another level, and that's one of the real major tragedies that was deprived for every single one of the people who were
yeah.
into his music.
Yeah.
And it's really sad. It's difficult, but we will never, ever, ever see anyone like that again. People can come close, but it's difficult because you remember back then, Mike, there was only like AM radio, a few, you know, radio
mm-hmm.
stations in any given town, and we were all collectively listening to the same music.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Nowadays, the kids today, they listen to goth, emo, punk, ska, indie, hip-hop, whatever.
Right.
And it is very difficult for everyone to universally gather behind one or two icons. So
mm-hmm.
it's very difficult for people like Lennon and his ilk to convey, because, again, they were conveying real spirituality. And you know I'm an atheist. So I'm not talking gobbledygook here.
Oh, I understand. No, I get what you're saying.
Yeah,
sure.
So people like that conveyed real spirituality, not this corporate religion, going back to somebody like Pat Boone. Oh, my God, even as a kid, even on American Bandstand, I could tell what a phony that guy was.
Didn't you always just wish that you and he were the same age so you could beat his ass?
Yeah.
just beat him up. Like if you both went to the same high school. On a day like today, we pass the time. Yeah, you know, just punch him out. Just say, stop singing that, you
That's
freak.
That's scary, man.
You know?
You're reading my mind. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, I didn't like people like that. On a day like today, we pass the time away. You know,
okay, in the last few seconds here, fess up, man. What were you back then? When you saw the Ed Sullivan show with the Beatles on there, what were you? Were you a greaser? What were you back then?
I was married.
Huh?
I probably was married. I have no idea. I don't know. I have to think about it. Sanchez, I got to go.
Okay,
thanks,
man.
Pal.
All right.
I appreciate you checking in. Back then, when we were on Ed Sullivan, I guess I was a kid. I don't know. This is my favorite song. Take care. I'll see you tomorrow night. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.